microphone. WBR Fairfax Radio, I'm Sue Bartholomew. Welcome to On the Commons. On the Commons with us today, we have Richard Torpey. Richard is an attorney in Florida, and I understand that Richard usually represents and works with developers, but he also lists associations among his clients as well as homeowners. Hello, Richard, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Hello, Sue.
I am correct in saying that you usually work with developers, right?
Oh, absolutely. Primarily, I do developer work, but a necessary outcropping of that is my works with homeowners associations, and over the years, both the associations as well as the individuals that are in those associations.
So you've basically seen things from all sides.
From every side, that's right.
From the beginning all the way through, huh?
Oh yeah, you know, it's been an interesting evolution because I've been doing this now for about 16 years, and I actually started out I've also represented several local governments over the years.
Oh.
So I've pretty much seen it from every angle of permitting and where homeowners associations, traditionally are trying to fill in for the weaknesses in a lot of local zoning regulation. That was their original and their basic premises, that when local government's zoning doesn't provide adequate protection for individuals who wanted to protect their property values, the homeowners association became popular because it's in essence a contract between people who live in the community and the community itself to protect property values.
It's a contract in the sense that it's a take it or leave it. It's a contract of adhesion. It's not something that most people say, gee whiz, I really want this, or no, I don't want you telling me what color my curtains can be.
It's kind of complicated because it is and it isn't a take-it-or-leave-it situation. Of course, nobody tells you where you have to live. You don't have to live in a deed-restricted community, and you don't have to live in any particular deed-restricted community. So in that sense, you don't have to take it. You can choose wherever you want to live. But yes, if you want to live in a particular community, you must agree to live by the regulations of that community. And, when we were talking the other day on the phone, my biggest issue with homeowners associations and condominium associations, by the way, because they have the similar problems, isn't really the fact that they exist and the rules. It's that the enforcement of those rules varies depending on who's in charge of the homeowners association. I think I said to you on the phone the other day when we were first talking, I compare homeowners associations to my views on capital punishment. I'm not opposed to capital punishment, but I am opposed to the people who administer it sometimes, because you get conflicting views or conflicting enforcement. You see that all over the country and all over the state of Florida, especially in homeowners associations. And not just from one homeowners association to the next, but you can see changing enforcement criteria from one board of directors to another, and that's a real problem.
Well, I agree with you, but I want to go back to something you said originally, and you said you don't have to live in any association. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it's like where you live, but in a lot of parts of the country right now, there are mandates. For instance, where I live in Fairfax County, 90% of all housing is in an association.
Sure.
And what they're doing here is they're taking down, demolishing older existing neighborhoods that don't have associations and replacing them with, higher density association-controlled development. So I guess the choice comes down to you either have the choice of buying a home or pitching a tent out someplace in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's an interesting situation you live in because you're in Florida, that you don't really have that problem. There is at least I don't know what the percentages are, but there is a large amount of homes and property available that is not within a homeowners association. So you really still in most of Florida have a viable choice.
But you
do have to trade out, and I agree with you. One of the biggest problems is in order to make that viable choice, you have to trade out the protection of your property value. There are just an innumerable amount of examples in Florida where folks would spend a lot of money on a nice home in a non-deed restricted community, and then their neighbor will build something less desirable, or more importantly, maintain it not as well as the one individual, and let the home become dilapidated and run down. And traditional methods of code enforcement are simply not adequate. So people who want to avoid that problem move into deed-restricted communities. And now, what you're talking about, you're right. If there's really no other option, that is kind of like saying that you don't have to have your telephone turned on. That doesn't make sense. Obviously, we've become so reliant on things like that.
It's a bit like like Henry Ford saying, you can have any color you want as long as it's a black car.
Exactly.
And that's essentially what we're dealing with. I mean, I used where I live in Fairfax County as an example, but that's not the only place. I mean, Loudoun has them. Even York County, Pennsylvania, which is predominantly rural, rural areas has mandates.
Sure.
And across the country now, just about every jurisdiction has discovered that, hey, this is such a neat way we get to collect taxes, and we don't have to provide anything for it. So they mandate associations.
Well, and I would never agree that government should mandate associations. If government wants to regulate what people put on their property, do it through land use and zoning.
I agree.
And then let the government deal with the enforcement of the land use and zoning. For government to say, hey, developer, if you're going to build in this area, you must do a deed-restricted community, I would have to say is just, to me, wrong.
But how would you fight something like that?
Well, therein is the biggest problem that I see in Florida, is the homeowner is at such a disadvantage. Even a citizen who's trying to fight the proliferation of homeowners associations is at a disadvantage, because it's the war chest mentality. Obviously, the only way in this country to redress your grievances is in the court system. The court system is cost prohibitive for most individual homeowners.
That's right.
And so it is not. I deal with it on a daily basis. Where, as a matter of fact, just yesterday I had a gentleman call me. His homeowners association is giving him a hard time on a roof issue. Now, I don't know if his roof issue is good, bad, or indifferent. I really have no idea, because I just spoke with him on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with the roof issue is whether or not the problem with this gentleman getting an appeal on that issue is the cost of him challenging his own association. I had another guy call me who wanted to access the court system on an issue for local government, but it's the same problem. Just to get the petition that he needs to file and to do it appropriately is probably going to cost him $3,000. A lot of people don't have $3,000.
Yeah, and I know of one lady who's been fighting her association for a number of years, and she's up to $500,000 in legal fees.
Sure. Oh, it's, well, I have clients, and that gets into this scary part of this bill.
That's
foreclose.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, really what's, that's talk about having a hammer over people.
That's right.
Is that if they want to, I just recently wrote a letter to a friend of mine who I'm actually representing him in a case against his homeowners association. Now, the case is about them improperly assessing a special assessment for $388 for rebuilding a dock. That's what the case is about.
Okay.
There's only really, I think there's 35 or 36 voting members in this association.
Mm-hmm.
And it came down to the approval of this dock was... like a 22, they just barely met the criterion for approving the special assessment to begin with. Well, when you started looking at the votes, there's all sorts of questions. I mean, the man had a legitimate question and beef with his association as to whether or not it actually passed. That means the special assessment passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the board of directors went ahead and did far beyond what they were authorized to do in the special assessment.
Yeah.
Now, we've been in that case for almost 3 years. Where we sit today is the court has ruled that the vote was correct, but the court has also ruled that the assessment was only valid to the extent that they stayed within the specific authority. In other words, he's agreed with us that they went beyond the authority.
Okay.
Problem I have now is this gentleman, the fees in that case have gone over $45,000 over a $388 issue.
Yeah.
If we lose that, ultimately, I mean, the case is not over. If we were to lose that, he risks foreclosure. So the real advantage that the association has in the state of Florida and in most jurisdictions is that if you want to challenge them, do it at your peril. That if you lose, you might get foreclosed on for money that's far in excess of the challenge that you wanted to raise. Secondly, and which makes that scarier, is at least within the state of Florida, courts give broad latitude to the associations. There's almost, in many jurisdictions anyway, there's almost this feeling like, well, you know, we like the idea of homeowners associations, so we are going to attempt to, as a court system, to rule in the association's favor whenever we can possibly do that. So only the most egregious violations of deed of restrictions are being effectively redressed in a lot of the courts. But the borderline cases, the ones that really raise a legitimate question, but the question could be interpreted both ways, those are being decided in favor of the associations.
And you're noticing this in the court system. You're noticing this down in Florida.
Oh, I'm seeing it, yeah, regularly in Florida, that the court systems are favoring the interpretations of the associations. That comes from a general body of law in the country, and truly in Florida. There's actually a requirement of when you interpret a local ordinance for a local government,
mm-hmm.
when the rules of interpreting those local government ordinances basically require the court system to give broad discretion to the local government and agree with their interpretation of their own laws.
Okay, right? I have a question for
sure.
You right here. We're not talking about laws here. We're talking about a contractual relationship, from
right.
what I understand. And everything I've ever heard of and read is that when you have a covenant, it's usually interpreted in favor of the weaker party, which in this case would be the homeowner.
Not true. Not true. Really, what happens in the state of Florida is the interpretation of the covenant kind of goes both ways. The courts on one side are going to break their back to say that covenants are enforceable. Covenants, deeds, and restrictions are enforceable. They are going to break their back the other way to determine whether or not a covenant is being properly interpreted against an individual. Okay, they're going to try to give the individual the benefit of the doubt. But what I'm seeing, at least in the areas of Florida where I litigate, which is largely the East Coast, and in the cases where I've had to have litigation on the issues, and there's not a lot to go to court. You got to keep that in mind. Most people, it's not worth the money.
Yeah.
But when they go to court, is that the courts have a tendency to, first of all, not like the cases to begin with, because they perceive them as being, I think they perceive them as being a waste of their time, or at least an annoyance.
Yeah, this is something we've noticed, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, they are an annoyance to them, but they also then, the court system has a tendency to say, well, you know, these facts are convoluted. We don't really know who was right, who was wrong. So they do a lot of the splitting the baby in half. And that's not necessarily good for the homeowner, because in interpreting prevailing, what they call the prevailing party rule, if the association sues in foreclosure for the failure to pay out an assessment or something, and the court does a tie goes to the runner, many times that tie actually is a loss to the homeowner because they wind up having to pay the attorney's fees.
So, you know, even when they win, they lose.
Even when they win, they lose sometimes, yeah. That is a very common thing you see, even both in homeowners associations, deed of restrictions. The way the courts handle cases involving homeowners association, deed of restrictions, is very similar to the way they handle enforcement of local government regulations on land use. And many times, you're right, when the homeowner wins, they lose. So the homeowner is at a gross disadvantage in raising legitimate challenges.
So what's the attraction of living in an association, then?
Well, I think that's an easy one. You move into it, if you're going to go spend $250,000 or you know, in Florida, you can still buy nice houses for $250,000 or more, and you want to make sure your neighbor doesn't have junk cars in his yard and let his grass grow up to 12 feet tall and not certain things that you don't want to have in a neighborhood, an association has the ability to make sure the neighbor doesn't do that. You know, you keep the association at its basic premise is supposed to make sure that everyone maintains their house at a certain reasonable level of maintenance. I don't disagree with that. I agree with that 100%. I won't live in an association, however, because I also know that what happens is you get folks that are, let me back up. When you think about it, in a homeowners association, by definition, the people who run to become the board of directors are what you and I might call the busybodies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
By definition, they're the folks that are concerned about what their neighbors are doing. Now,
so that's the attraction,
time,
really. It's to control your neighbors. So
well, from not what... really. Most of the time, my experience has been that those boards are comprised of folks that are really have a, what I'll phrase is to be a legitimate interest in preserving their neighborhood. And they really don't want to mess with their neighbor over minor things. I think I represent right now 8 or 9 associations. Over the years, I've probably represented 15 or 20, and I've been in front of innumerable associations. So I've dealt with too many boards of directors to count.
Okay.
And I can tell you that my impression is most of the times those boards of directors are sincerely interested in making sure they preserve the property values and making a nice community to live in. But you have situations where you get, and the smaller the association, I think the more likely this is to occur, where you get boards of directors that are on a power trip. And they just want to, you know, they for whatever reason, need authority in their life. And when you make them a board member, if you get 3 or 4, or more importantly, a majority on a board that are all on a power trip, that's where you have problems. You know, there you wind up with personality conflicts. You wind up with people who are being over aggressive in the enforcement of their own codes because adding to the fact that many times these deeds of restrictions aren't the best written documents, so they are hard to interpret.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have one association that I represent right now where I represent the board, and they came to me because a citizen was complaining to them. Because someone in the neighborhood had done some elaborate landscaping in the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And the citizen had read the deed of restrictions to mean that you couldn't do landscaping in your front yard. And the citizen wanted these people to remove the landscaping. Now, I looked at the deed of restrictions, and you had to read 3 different sections of the deed of restrictions
mm-hmm.
to, first of all, that were in various areas, to understand what the meaning of the deed of restrictions were. There was definitely a section that said that there shall be no improvements forward of the front building line of the property. No improvements at all.
Well, what does improvement mean?
Well, good point, right? But then when you went to the landscaping provision, it actually required you to have a certain amount of trees and shrubs in your front yard.
Okay.
So when you read them, the law, they says you read things in peri materia, meaning you read them collectively. You don't do the old biblical interpretation where you can justify anything by reading one line. You have to read everything in context.
Okay.
So when I took it, I had to do a written opinion. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. I had to do a written opinion to this board saying, when you take this section of your deed of restrictions and you compare it to this set of the deed of restrictions, it is clear that not only are you allowed to landscape your front yard, in fact, you're required to landscape your front yard. So although I cannot give you any part of your code that says that this is not an improvement, and therefore a violation of the sections that says no improvements in front of the front building line, I've got to give a common sense interpretation to say that they didn't mean by the section that said no improvement that you couldn't landscape your front yards, so the guy's landscaping is okay. And that was my written opinion. Now, the funny part or the scary part of that was Rick Torpy's written opinion.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a judge. I'm not a jury. I'm not a legislator. It was just my opinion. Fortunately, for the homeowner who has the landscaping, I was the guy that the board of directors relied upon. What if they didn't come to me? What if it was just the board of directors that didn't like this guy's landscaping?
That's
and they
right.
used that one section
that's right.
to go after him?
That's right.
And that's where you have the problem.
Yeah.
Because you can justify many things under deeds of restrictions.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, you've got one opinion of one of the homeowners who says, it's my opinion that he's not allowed to landscape, and I want him to take all of that out. And then you have your opinion, which is the more educated and saner opinion.
Well, you know, some would question that, but...
if you took the no improvements to the absurd, if you mow your lawn, you're improving.
Absolutely. I mean,
and so where'd you go? Where'd you stop?
You can interpret anything to absurdity.
That's right.
I've said to many of my clients over the years, I because of working with local governments, homeowners associations, public bodies, where citizens try to justify what they want,
mm-hmm.
I've said many times that, you can make any example to create an absurd result. It's easy to do. But you've got to use common sense and good judgment all the time. I mean, that's really what good judges should do. That's what good lawyers should do. That's what good homeowners associations should do, is take documents that aren't perfect and use common sense and good judgment in interpreting what they mean. I was a policeman before I was a lawyer for 7 years.
Okay.
And every day I was called upon to take citizens' behavior, apply it to law that sometimes was less than clear, and make a common sense and good judgment decision as to whether what I should do in that situation. The problem is in homeowners associations that's not always what happens. Well, that's the problem every day in life. But when you apply it to a homeowners association where the power of the person who's applying the law is foreclosure, it results in some very nasty, nasty problems.
And that is a big gun. I mean, we're going to talk about foreclosure when we come in. But before we get too further afield, I kind of want to go back to the developers in Florida in particular. Do you find that when a developer goes in and goes through all the zoning and permitting requirements, that they get approval a lot faster if there is an association?
No, not in Florida. I don't.
No?
I'll tell you that is the overwhelming, I can't think of a development community that I have helped with that hasn't been deed restricted. And that is largely because of a sense that the property is more marketable. Remember, citizens like these things unless they've had a bad experience.
More and more of them are saying, I don't want to live in an association,
well,
and I'm hearing from them.
It's a trend. It's certainly people are starting to see the downside.
Yeah.
As we get more and more associations, you're starting to see where more and more citizens are having these bad things happen to them. And they're starting to realize the shortcomings of homeowners associations. And my hope is that, through talk shows like yours and some of the things we're doing in Florida, that there'll be regulations implemented that'll help to... like I told you before, I'm not against homeowners associations. I think they're a good tool for protecting private property landowner rights. What needs to be clarified and what needs to be shored up is the enforcement side of those rules. Who can do it? What levers they have. The delicate balance is you have to give the association enough authority to bring the person who is really in defiance, make them comply, but on the other side, not so much authority that they can abuse that power with discretionary calls.
I live in an association that's over 30 years old, and my governing documents are all of 6 pages long. Yeah. And so the association really doesn't have a whole lot of power. Nowadays, they get volumes of restrictions. Are they necessary?
Are what necessary?
And all of these restrictions. Do you need 200-400 pages, 500 pages?
I am a lawyer who does not believe in more words. I believe more words, all that does is creates more confusion.
Okay.
What you see, and the problem is that everyone's trying to plug every hole that's occurred in every place, in every association over the years. The other problem you see is that many times these association documents are being created. They're not being written for that particular association.
Yeah,
they
just
are cut and pasted.
Yeah.
And so you'll get a set of documents that encompasses a little bit from one association, a little bit from another association, and that's where you're getting these voluminous sets of documents. When I engage in review of association documents, the ones that I think are the best are the ones that are, maybe 10, 15 pages long, that cover the real issues that affect property value and leave a lot of the daily personal choice issues out of them.
What would you consider important to include in the restrictions?
Well, I mean, certainly maintenance is the biggest one.
Okay.
You know, requiring people to maintain their houses, not having their paint peeling and not having mold and mildew and making sure they have a yard that's acceptable, whether that yard be out of grass or gravel, I don't care, but not dirt, you know, and making sure the grass isn't grown 6 feet high and making sure they don't have junk vehicles laying around. Those things are, I think, very important. I don't want to live next to that situation. You don't want to live next to that situation. And they definitely affect property values.
How many of your neighbors have situations like that?
Very few. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's a good thing to have in documents because most people will maintain their properties. For that circumstance where you have the person that doesn't, it would be nice in a deed-restricted community to be able to force them to clean up their property.
So could I, for instance, not without having the association, have the deed restrictions in place? And I know that most deed restrictions allow the members to enforce them. Mm-hmm. So if I lived next door to you or Joe, and Joe wasn't maintaining his property the way I thought he should be, couldn't I go and say, hey, you know, here are the deed restrictions. Here's what we agreed to.
Yeah.
If you need help mowing your yard, let me know, and I'll be glad to loan you my lawnmower.
In utopia, that's great. In reality, Joe's going to wave to you with one finger on his hand.
Well, that's...
And he's not going to do it.
Well, that's you know, the possibility.
No, that's not a possibility. I got to tell you, that's the reality. Because remember, the Joe that's out there, I say this to all of my associations, that really... In an association, I really don't care what size, whether it's 100 or 1,000 people, you're probably going to have about less than 1% that doesn't maintain their property.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, that same 1% are the ones that are going to tell you what you can do with yourself and your deed restrictions. So you will find that the people that are usually the worst violators are not the ones that voluntarily will come into compliance. You need some power. And so that's number one. Number two, if the association doesn't have the power, the individual homeowner typically isn't going to have to want to spend the money to go to a court to get an injunction to force their neighbor to clean up their yard. It's too expensive.
Yeah, but right now everybody's being forced, for instance, in the situation, the scenario you described a while ago, had the association decided to go after this guy and make him remove all of his landscaping.
Right.
Then the neighbors would have had to have foot the bill for the litigation, whether or not they agreed with it.
Sure, but that's the situation where you split up the cost amongst, in that particular association, 250 property owners as opposed to one person footing the bill by themselves. You know, 250 people put in $10, that's a lot of money to fund litigation to force someone to comply with deed restrictions. That's the reality of that. The homeowners association... who can collect assessments, and on that occasion that they have to seek enforcement against the real bad violator, it doesn't cost any one individual too much money. And you can bring that one real violator into compliance. I mean, again, I absolutely think homeowners associations have a good place and should not be abolished. The problem is the enforcement of the rules and the discretion to enforce those rules. That's where you're seeing a big outcry coming out. Where the association's board of directors is power hungry. That's where you see the bad cases coming forward. And of course, you know, interestingly, when you've been in law as long as I have, what you realize is the only cases that make headlines, the only cases that get the publicity, are the worst of the worst.
That's true. That's
you
very
know,
true.
You don't see the other side of that coin, where the homeowners association is crying to get somebody to come into compliance because they've got 10 junk vehicles and the house looks like there's rats running around and they're having problems because of the delays in the court system to make the person clean the place up. You know, I see that case too.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Hold that thought because we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
We're talking to Rick Torpy from Florida and you're on the Commons.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR Fairfax Radio. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today we have Rick Torpy. Rick is an attorney in Florida who represents developers, homeowners associations, as well as individual homeowners, and he understands the problems from every aspect. Rick, thanks. I know you're a busy man, and I really appreciate you taking time out to join us today.
Well, it's been enjoyable so far, Shu, just to kind of talk about this topic. Is it's important to get all the views out there and try to see what we can do to make the system better.
Well, right now, Florida's doing some good stuff. You've got a whole lot of hearings going on across the country.
Sure.
And I had one of your representatives, Julio Robina, was on a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And he's a real dynamo, isn't he?
Yeah, you know. I tell you, there's a lot of stuff going on in Florida about homeowners and condominium associations. And needless to say, Florida being growing as fast as we are, this issue is on the forefront. And I know there is committee meetings going on all over the state of Florida right now to discuss this problem that we've been discussing for the last half hour. And I hope something good comes out of it. I know the Florida legislature is every year dealing with our state law to try to further define how associations have to conduct their business, to try to plug some of the holes and leave the association intact so that you can get the benefits of it, but try to minimize some of the real problems that come up with aggressive enforcement of some of the rules and regulations.
What, for instance, reducing it? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with one page of restrictions.
Right.
I think that if you're going to have it, it ought to be very, very simple and very clear.
Well, I think the problem really requires three things.
Okay.
I do agree with you that there should be some kind of regulation out there that limits the amount of words that can be a deed of restrictions. knowing that lawyers have such an integral part in developing legislation, that's not exactly the group of folks you ask to limit their words. So I don't think that's realistically going to happen. But it would be nice. As I said earlier in the show, I'm one of those guys. I'm a minimalist. My documents have a tendency to be fairly short. I try to cover the areas that are necessary and cut out a lot of the junk. But the second thing that I think is, I think is probably as important is notice to the individual. Right now in Florida, when you buy a home, they have to give you notice that it's a deed-restricted community.
Mm-hmm.
But quite frankly, that notice is usually a very good notice. It's hard to buy a house without knowing there's a deed-restricted community. But individuals don't really understand what that means. And you can say ignorance of the law is no excuse. I don't believe in that when it comes to homeowners associations. Somehow, we need to make sure people understand that when you buy in a deed-restricted community, they're serious. And, you know, you really are giving up your private property landowner rights when you buy in there. You're agreeing to do it by contract. I mean, it's really, deed-restricted communities are a creature of contract law.
That's right.
So, you know, you are agreeing to be subject to these rules and regulations, just like if you wanted to join a private club. You agree when you join that private club that you'll abide by the rules and regulations of the club. There's really no difference. It's just that people aren't really understanding how strict those rules can be sometimes. So there's got to be some kind of better notice to individual consumers, homeowners that buy into a deed-restricted community. And then the third thing that I think that needs to be accomplished, I just don't agree with the foreclosure process on people's homesteads.
Okay.
I don't really think that should be in a deed-restricted community the hammer that the community can hold over an individual's head. In the state of Florida, because your house, where you live, is your homestead. I mean, literally, you can be a drug dealer, and you can hide your drug. You can go buy a $10 million mansion with your drug money, and the government can't foreclose you. But if you don't mow your grass, in the worst case, your homeowners association can.
Now,
that's a problem.
Can you maybe give us a little bit of information about what the Homestead Act or protections do?
Sure.
And I think Florida has about the best protections out there, right?
Well, it's unlimited. If the homestead protection exemption in the state of Florida is constitutional, and therefore it supersedes every other state law that exists, and it is just that your homestead is free; it cannot be foreclosed against by creditor claims. Unless there's only two circumstances. One are issues with government claims, IRS specifically, and the other is generally when you voluntarily allow that to happen. The classic example of that is your mortgage company. When you buy a home and you borrow money and you sign the mortgage document, a mortgage is nothing more than a private contract that tells your bank that if you don't pay for the debt, the note, they can take your home from you.
Okay.
So it's private contract law. Well, the other types of private contract laws where you are accepting, you know, contracting to accept the rule from homestead exemption is homeowners associations. When you go to the closing table in Florida and you are buying in a deed-restricted community, one of the documents you get at the closing table is an acknowledgement that this is a deed-restricted community, and you are agreeing to abide by the rules and regulations of the deed-restricted community. When you read the rules and regulations in most homeowners associations, one of their rules and regulations is that those rules can be enforced by foreclosure. So you are contractually waiving your constitutional homestead exemption, and in many situations you don't have a clue you're doing it.
Okay, that was going to be my question. If you're handed 500 pages,
absolutely.
Do most people understand that they're signing that away?
I don't think so. I really. Believe, and I believe the fix to that is simple. When you are, and I got to back up a little bit. You know, this process, this is a very, very difficult situation because, remember, when you're going to go buy a house, you have realtors that are anxious for the sale to happen.
That's right.
You're anxious to buy the house. You're excited.
Mm-hmm.
The seller's anxious to sell the house.
That's right.
The last thing you want is people coming to their closing table telling you the bad news.
Yeah.
So, it's really not like you're going to have Shu Bartholomew or Rick Torpy sitting there going, be careful. That's not what happens. Everybody's, if the closing goes properly, first of all, they're quick and rushed, and secondly, you're trying to keep it on an upbeat notice. So, by the way, you need to sign this document. That just says you realize there's a deed restriction here. There should be some kind of a thing that says, hey, by the way, you're signing deed restrictions, but you just need to understand that if you don't obey the rules, they can take your house. Some way of making sure people understand that. Quite frankly, I think even if that was out there, that's not going to be that helpful because most people are still going to they're not going to appreciate the real magnitude of that.
Well, I think, buying a house is an emotional purchase.
Is what?
It's an emotional purchase.
That's
people
right.
buy with emotion.
Sure, sure.
And I used to sell real estate, by the way.
Right.
A long time ago, before associations had the power to foreclose, and I used to tell people, look, there's an association, and this is what it does. And actually, I used to ask them to ask me to limit my search to non-association property.
Right.
And, they didn't want to hear that. They wanted something new, and everything new came in an association.
Right.
And so, so I would say, look, here are the governing documents, to read them, because if you run into problems with your association, don't call me.
Well, you know, I've got to go back to tell you that I still, in my experience, is that the overwhelming majority of associations are good. And I've got to stay on the record saying that. I don't want anyone to think that I'm against associations. I'm not. I've had too much exposure to them and experience with them to say that they if you like that kind of living, if you want to make sure that everybody's house is maintained the same and the houses generally look the same and you're in this deed restricted protective little enclave, it's fine. But in the situation where you have an overbearing board of directors, it's bad. Or if you don't understand the rules, it can be very bad. A guy like I said earlier, a guy like me, I can't live in a homeowners association because I won't obey all the rules.
I like you, Rich.
You know, but that's my choice.
Yeah.
You know, I won't obey all the rules, so I just don't go and live there. And I'm not that again. I'm not concerned about that problem. It's just this ability for folks to kind of unknowingly get into an association with not really appreciating the magnitude of the ability to foreclose if you won't obey the rules. And that to me is the single biggest concern I have, is if we were to modify that foreclosure right, still allow the associations the power to enforce their deed of restrictions, to protect their neighbors, and protect themselves from their neighbors' behavior if their neighbors are not maintaining their property. I applaud that. I think that's something that we, first of all, I don't think you could get rid of that right to contract anyway, but I don't think we should. But we've got to educate people, and we've got to limit that foreclosure right so that associations are humbled a little bit as well.
Can the associations foreclose for, say, fines?
Sure. Most common one I do is for fines.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's not the most common, but it is not uncommon for me to foreclose because folks have failed to maintain their property, so the association fines them, and then there's a foreclosure on it. What you see too is a lot of times a foreclosure is where the association steps in and does some kind of repair. You'll see foreclosures there as well, but the most common foreclosure is really for failure to pay their monthly assessment.
Inside Edition did a story some years ago. On a couple, on a foreclosure in a particular association where a young couple had lost their baby, and while they were making funeral arrangements, the association went in and painted their chimney and then foreclosed to collect the $400 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, there's a saying in the law that bad facts make bad law.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of it. I don't know what the rest of that story is. But certainly it makes for a bad story, which knee-jerk reaction would probably result in some law that would overreact. I'm sure that if you check the tabloids, you could find all sorts of terrible stories where homeowners association took people's houses because they had to paint their chimney. I have to believe that that's the minority, and not only the minority, that is almost, that particular case that you described is probably statistically non-existent. What is very common, though, is people coming into these associations that run into troubled times and can't pay their fees, and they lose their home for $287 because they couldn't pay their fees. You know, remember, the association's fees are frequently very small. So someone who doesn't pay their association fees for a year, it might mean they only owe less than $100 or $200, but they don't have the $200, and that's a foreclosable offense.
Well, there was one of the stories, one of the testimonies in the recent hearings being conducted in Florida was apparently a 77-year-old woman who lost her home because the association alleged she owed 4 cents.
Yeah, well, I have a real problem with that. There's got to be more to that story. I've heard that story too. I've heard that testimony was out there.
Yeah.
I won't bite on that because I don't believe it. I believe there's more to the story, but I wouldn't be surprised if that same 77-year-old woman said, you know, I couldn't pay my 200, I owed the association 1 year's worth of assessments, $165, and I lost my home over $165. I wouldn't be surprised at that, and I don't know that that's much difference than 4 cents. The loss sustained by that individual is just as bad, and the dollar amounts, relative dollar amounts, are ridiculous. But the other side of that is, and I've had this question asked to me, you know, when people go into a deed restricted community and they agree to pay a monthly assessment, at what point does the association start to take action? You know, because what you've got, remember the other side of that coin.
Mm-hmm.
Is you've got the people who aren't paying their monthly assessment.
Yeah.
Those people who are are clamoring at the board of directors to do something about
it. That's right.
So many times those cases that you're talking about really aren't motivated by the board. They're motivated by the board's need to respond to those folks who are complying with the rules and regulations. And again, that is a problem because, to me, associations are about maintenance of property. If my house is maintained and the house is looking good and it's not diminishing property value, I don't believe foreclosure should be a remedy. Remember, monthly assessments, majority of monthly assessments don't go to maintaining an individual's property. They're to maintain the common areas.
That's right.
That's what they're for. So, you know, if someone's failing to pay their monthly assessment because they can't afford it, sue them. Get a judgment against them.
I agree.
But don't foreclose them. If someone's not maintaining their house and the house is becoming an eyesore and bringing down property values, get an injunction. Go fix the problem. You know, associations have that right. Put a lien on the house so that if the person never sells it, the association gets paid. But don't foreclose them. Don't kick them out of their house.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And I agree with you that if you live in an association, you absolutely owe the regular assessments.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's part of the deal. I don't think there's anybody that can honestly say they move into a deed-restricted community that doesn't know there's monthly assessments. I wouldn't believe someone who said they didn't know that, at least not in the state of Florida today, because that's one of the big disclosure documents. You know, you can say I didn't know that I had to have a mailbox that was painted blue.
Yeah.
But it's going to be really hard for you with a straight face to say that I didn't know I had to pay $27 a month in monthly assessments because it's one of the disclosure documents you get. And people need to pay those. Because they do get a benefit for it, too. I mean, when you live in a deed-restricted community, most of them have really, you know, pretty landscaping somewhere, maybe a common area pool and, you know, whatever they come with. Maybe it's just that the streets are maintained. I don't know. I mean, the formula varies from association to association. But you're getting a value. And you should pay for that value.
Well, when we bought, there were no disclosures. And we were just told that there was an assessment. This was after we had a ratified contract.
Right.
And the assessment covered trash removal and snow removal.
Right.
And that was it. That was pretty much it. So we knew there was an assessment, but we didn't realize that all the other things that went along with it. But again, you know, like I said, my documents are all of 6 pages long.
Yeah, so you're in a situation that's not that bad. And I would think it can't be that bad. It seems that when I listen to you talk, your issue is the length of these documents and the plethora of rules that have been promulgated by associations. And
I think it's the quality of life that has diminished considerably in residential America today because of associations.
I can't be that broad with you on that. I think that I also think that the quality of life has been increased in many, many associations as well. It's you know, it's all what you're looking for. I think 10 years ago, it was the extraordinary situation where an association got heavy-handed and extracted some punishment upon one of its residents they didn't deserve. Today, I think that happens much more often.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That's what's got my concern.
And that's exactly what I mean when I talk about the quality of life.
Right.
I think that it's become accepted now that people would walk around and inspect, you know, look at your grass, look at the shade of white that your curtains are. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't have any of this, but, you know, this has become part of the accepted way that we live in deed-restricted communities.
Sure.
All of the mailboxes have got to be the same color. All of the trim has got to be the same color. You know, it's got to the point where it's just completely ridiculous.
Well, I think you coming from the area you are where it seems to me what you're telling me is deed-restricted communities are, you know, almost the exclusive.
Yeah, they are.
There's not really much other choice. I think the problem you described there is much more difficult than we have in the state of Florida. As I said at the opening of the show, at least within the state of Florida, there is a tremendous amount of options still available to you. You do not need to choose a deed-restricted community. And, I mean, it's interesting. I have one case in my office right now where the exact issue is the person painted their house the wrong color.
Yeah.
And didn't get approval.
Yeah.
And the association is like, look, we really don't want to mess with this guy, but by the same token, if we don't, the next guy is going to paint it purple. And, they, you know, these color restrictions and things are not to protect from what the common man would think would be a common color. It's the person that wants to paint their house green, yellow, and pink and, you know, really make it an eyesore because they think it's cool. You know, guys like me probably wouldn't care, but there's a lot of folks that do care, and they choose deed-restricted living to prevent that problem. You've got to respect those folks as well. I mean, for every person out there that's had a bad experience with this homeowners association, I would be willing to bet, based on my experience, there's thousands that would disagree. I still think it's the overwhelming minority that are having bad experiences, but the bad experiences are becoming some really bad experiences.
But
and,
like you said, they're increasing. I mean,
yeah,
10 years ago,
right,
you wouldn't see the, you know, we never saw the problems we're seeing now.
Right.
And now it's becoming accepted. And
right,
now you have these little dictators running around just inspecting and basically throwing their weight around.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
and I think that if you don't put a stop to it at some point, it's just, you know, where does it end? We take it to the absurd. Where does it end?
Yeah.
But what do you hope will come out of all of the hearings that are being conducted right now in Florida?
Well, my single biggest hope is that they'll affect the ability of a homeowners association to foreclose on homestead property. I really think that I would like to see that diminished or eliminated entirely. I just think that is the right that tips the scale too far in favor of the homeowners association. And it doesn't allow the property owner that has a legitimate dispute to raise it because they're afraid that if they lose their legitimate dispute, they're going to lose their home in foreclosure because the cost of the dispute, the legal fees involved, will be so high that they can't afford them.
Okay, so you'd be happy if we did away with the foreclosures?
I would be happy if we did away with the foreclosure. I think that right now is enough. I am really against broad sweeping changes in things like this because of a few bad examples. I think you can go too far. Incremental change is good. And right now I'd be very happy to see the homestead exemption protected and the foreclosure rights minimized, and see how that goes. See if that takes care of some of the problems. And if it doesn't, you know, we have to take another step. Because the one thing I can tell you is not going to happen. You're not going to see a decrease in the amount of deed restricted communities.
I agree with you there.
People like them, the trend is for them, and the development community is supporting them. So they're going to grow, and we just need to restrict how those rules are enforced. And then finally, like I said earlier, I think that somehow we need to do much better notice up front to people who are moving into those communities of what they're getting into. I mean, if people had fair and adequate disclosure of what they're getting into and they understood the ramifications and they still violated the regulations, well, you know, I'm not Big Brother and I don't believe in protecting everybody from themselves. Buying a home today is a complicated process and people need to take the time. It's probably the single biggest purchase in their life.
Yeah.
They need to take the time to understand what they're doing. And if they go into it emotionally and don't educate themselves, that's the problem that lawyers have. I'm probably not as sympathetic to that as others are. I think everyone needs to take time to educate themselves on what they're doing. And when they hear the word deed restriction and homeowners association, they need to step back and understand what they're buying into.
But the flip side of that is to have an alternative. And in some parts of the country, that's just not available.
I agree. Okay. I hear what you're saying. And as I said, I have... I live in a state where the alternative is available.
Yeah.
But if there are communities and where there really isn't a viable option, then probably those communities, those governments need to be a little bit more aggressive in protecting the rights of the landowner.
I agree with you. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. Would you believe the hour is gone? It just kind of flew by for me.
Time flies when you're having fun, Shu.
It was fun. I hope you'll come back sometime, and good luck with all the hearings in Florida.
Well, and good luck to you up there, and keep me posted on what you're finding out.
I sure will, and thanks for hanging out with us on the Commons today. Please join us every Saturday, same time, same place. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Stay tuned, stay free. See y'all next week.
Thanks. And here we go.